This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're going to spend the rest of our show today marking the 50th anniversary of NPR. We've got some vintage tape, some great people, and we're opening our phone lines for the rest of the hour. 800-222-9455 is our number. We want to hear from you about your relationship with public radio. When did you first start listening to NPR? Is there a segment that's stuck with you over the years? Tell us about it. 800-222-9455 is the number. What are your favorite programs to listen to? And what do you hope to hear from NPR in the future? 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Let's begin this conversation by listening to a voicemail we got from a listener about his appreciation for NPR. This is Ricardo in Urbana.
Many years ago, my daughter, who was in college and had a babysitting or nanny gig, called me up, and as we were talking about her new job, I said, how is the family? And she said, oh, this baby's going to be fine. He's going to grow up to be very intelligent. And I said, how do you know that? And she said, because the parents listen to NPR every day. I thought it was a very cute way for her to recognize the value of NPR, and I was so glad that she could recognize its contribution to, indirectly, to her life too. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a lovely story, Ricardo. Joining me now to talk more about the first 50 years of public radio and the next 50 is Gwen Macsai. Gwen is an Illinois native. You may recognize her from her time guest hosting the 21st. She also hosted ReSound, the Third Coast Audio Festival's radio show that remixed some of the best audio stories from around the world. It aired weekly on WBEZ in Chicago. Her pieces and humorous essays have also aired nationally on NPR. Gwen, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us is Yvonne Booz, arts and culture reporter at Northern Public Radio, WNIJ in DeKalb, one of our partner stations. Yvonne, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me today.
And finally, Jay Pierce. He's general manager and a familiar voice to listeners of WVIK in the Quad Cities. He's also worked in commercial and public radio stations across Illinois, from Carbondale to Champaign, Urbana. Jay, nice to have you with us as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Gwen, I want to start with you, and I can tell you the moment I fell in love with public radio as a listener, if I may. It was the late 90s. I had a summer job as a security guard / EMT at the old, mostly abandoned Southworks steel mill on the South Shore of Chicago. I was listening to this little program called This American Life. Yes, I am that cliched public radio journalist of a certain age who was inspired by TAL. Anyway, the episode, it was called Trek. It was about two men, one black, one white, traveling across the new South Africa and recording very different perspectives of what they saw. I just never heard anything like that before. Obviously, two decades later, I'm still thinking about it. It took me 13 years until I actually got a paycheck in public radio. And all this is just a really long windup for me to ask you, Gwen, what drew you to working in public radio?
Well, I'm so much older than you I have to go back a much longer way. My parents also had public radio on a lot. And so I grew up with it, but I was volunteering for a community station in Urbana, WEFT, which I just thought was the funnest thing ever. And when it came time to graduate, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I loved working at the radio station. So I had a friend who worked at WBEZ, the public station in Chicago, and I asked him what I should do if I wanted to get a job. And anyway, it's a long story, but I just kind of grew up with it. And then once I became involved in it, I could just, like, I remember so many great pieces. The one that comes to mind that caught my attention, I was already working there, but was an old Ira Glass piece about song lyrics that everybody gets wrong and how
never leave your pizza burning.
There's a bad moon on, there's a bathroom on the right. Yeah. Anyway, so there have been so many, you know, driveway moments, but anyway, I just started in community radio and I just thought public radio is kind of like that. I'll check that out. And that's how kind of I got started.
That's great. Yvonne, same question to you. What drew you to public radio? And I ask especially because you've done other things in life. You know, is your affinity with audio? Is it with radio? Maybe you'd just be just as happy writing in magazines or newspapers. What drew you and got you at WNIJ?
Well, I love writing across the board, and I think it was just my destiny to be at WNIJ. Like you said, I was doing other things. I worked in for the corporate world for about 22 years, and you know, I went to school for broadcast and also print journalism. And there was a point where I had the opportunity to leave my job with a great severance package, and I said, now this is my chance. Now, as far as WNIJ, I just happened to be volunteering with a local organization, and one of the people on that board used to work at WNIJ. So when I was telling them my story, they suggested that I reach out to the news director, and that's how everything happened. I originally was trying to just get an internship, because I went back to school for, I actually went to Illinois Media School just to refresh my skills because it had been years since I had gotten my degrees. And I went back to school and I was just trying to get an internship, but it turned into a part-time job. And now I'm a full-time employee with the help of RFA, Report for America.
That's great. And Jay, you've worked, Jay Pierce of WVIK, you've worked in both commercial and public broadcasting. Maybe you can talk about the differences and what has drawn you to public radio for so long now.
Oh, sure. Public radio was, when NPR was 5 years old, I guess, the first time I heard it, 1975. To date myself, I was a business administration major at the Circle campus of the University of Illinois. And I took a speech communications class and the professor assigned us to listen to All Things Considered. And I was hooked after that. I mean, that was the end of it. But I did spend, you know, I transferred to Southern Illinois University where they had an NPR station and a robust radio television school. And, you know, my intent was at that point to get into news, but I just wanted to be on the air any way I could or, you know, get the experience. So I worked at this station there, WSIU, and then I worked at commercial stations doing news, disc jockeying, anything to get the experience. After college, then, you know, I morphed into the news thing and worked at some commercial stations and then had the opportunity to go back to Southern Illinois University when they opened up a second full-time news position there as assistant news director. And, you know, pretty much the preponderance of my time has been there. And then I dallied a little bit in Chicago and commercial media again. And then it was down to Champaign and now over here. So
I want to take this opportunity. We need to take a break in about a minute here, but I want to read a couple of texts we've been getting from listeners. We've asked them all week. You can join our texting group by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. And they have been sharing their memories and what got them into NPR all week. Denise in Decatur says, about 15 years ago, I had a pocket-sized radio I took out with me to work in the garden. I came across Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I was hooked. I have more than once sat in my employer's parking lot or my driveway waiting for a segment to finish. I do not exaggerate when I say NPR News has helped keep me sane during the last presidential administration. I trust your reporting and honesty. Thank you for that message, Denise. Jessica from Peoria, meanwhile, says, I first started listening to NPR programs via podcasts in 2016. I felt like the times called for me to educate myself more in politics, news, racial justice, etc. NPR programs have provided a go-to source for me that I trust to be truthful and relevant. Listeners, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. What is your public radio origin story? 800-222-9455. Where do you want public radio to go in the next 50 years? We're going to continue this conversation after a short break on the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by AARP Illinois. Featuring Disrupt Disparities, an initiative working to bring about policy, systemic, and structural changes for older Americans of color. More information on this multi-year project at disruptdisparitiesil.org. www.christyclinic.com. Support for the 21st comes from Christy Clinic. Christy Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christy Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's the 50th anniversary of NPR. You just heard a vintage music button you would have heard on public radio in Illinois in the 1970s. We're talking about the past, present, and future of public radio in Illinois with Mayor Jay Pierce, general manager of WVIK in the Quad Cities, Yvonne Booz, an arts and culture reporter at WNIJ in DeKalb, and Gwen Maxey, a radio producer, writer, and the host of Resound from the Third Coast International Audio Festival, among many other pieces that have aired on NPR over the years. Listeners, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Gwen, do you remember your first big breakthrough audio story?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had done one sort of serious story for NPR, and I had an idea that I wanted to cover the fact that the Oscars were made in Chicago, the statues were made in Chicago. And, you know, I was just going to go and interview them and see what happened. And I had met Ira Glass just prior to that, and he agreed to produce the piece. And, you know, he was not a rock star at the time. He was extremely talented, but he wasn't, you know, famous. And so he calls me up the night before I'm supposed to go. And he goes, I have it. He had the whole thing planned out in his head. He goes, you have to try and buy one. And I was like, what? And he said, no matter what the guy says, you just have to keep hammering home. Offer him $1, offer him $2. But just every time you just have to just hammer the guy over the head. And I was like, okay, you know, like whatever you say, Mr. Producer. And so I did, and I actually thought that the tape was, I didn't think I had much. And I learned so much from this process. And I come back to NPR and he listens to it and he's like, I like this, I like that, I like this, that sucks, this is good. And he, you know, he's like a whirling dervish tape cutter back in the days when you actually had to cut tape with a razor blade and grease pencil and put it back together, splice it together. And I wrote a script and he completely rewrote it. And I learned so much from the process, and it aired, and it was my first funny piece. And it was really, really fun. And I learned so much just about, you don't need a lot of tape. I learned a lot about writing and the rhythm of writing for the radio, about, you know, kind of writing tongue in cheek, kind of how to make fun of, you know, gently make fun of the person you're interviewing without making them angry. It was a lot in one piece, but it was really, really, really fun. And then, of course, he went on to be the god of public radio. So it was always fun to say I knew him when.
We actually have a clip from that story. Let's take a listen. This is the end of Gwen's story about Oscar statues being made in Chicago.
Because the Academy doesn't know how many people will win when they place their order for the Oscars, there's always a surplus. Standing there in the storeroom, I figured it was worth one last shot.
Well, if I can't have one, can I at least hold one?
Sure you can hold one. They're kind of heavy.
It's very heavy, especially when you hoist it above your head. I'd like to thank all the people that made this possible. For National Public Radio, this is Gwen Maxey in Chicago.
Love it. Love it. Let's go back to the...
That was Ira's idea also, by the way.
It's good to have a good producer working with you
on
a story.
Yes, it is.
let's go back to the phones, 800-222-9455. Gary is on the line from Galesburg. Gary, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Hi. When did you start listening to NPR?
I started listening, I think, in the 1980s. I started doing sewing and alterations for a living and for money. And I found that listening to the radio could entertain me and inform me by listening. And yet I didn't have to look like you do at the television, which would distract you. And so, you know, I could focus on what I was working on and still get things accomplished, but yet listen to the news, listen to interviews, feature stories, human interest stories. And it really, I'm still sewing to this day, and listening to NPR, it just feels like an old friend and a great comfort to me.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, to hear the voices and to hear the stories and the news and, you know, to drink a cup of coffee while I'm working and to listen, it's just a very warm, comfortable feeling for me. And I've really enjoyed NPR all these years. I'm also
Thank you.
Actor.
Thank you. So I just want to say thank you so much, Gary, for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go now to another call. We have a lot of callers waiting. Linda is on the line in Lake County. Linda. Hello, Linda. Are you there? All right. We're going to move ahead then to Carol is on the line in Frankfurt. Carol, thank you for calling in.
Hi. My name is Carol Gaston. I'm from Strengthville, Illinois. I went to Pasadena City College, and I got involved in public radio there. And then when I came back to go to UIS, I worked for WUIS, and I did print handicap. I also had my own talk show called Carol's Corner, and I loved it so much. I got involved with Ray Schroeder, who got me on TV. So Channel 4, for 20 years, I hosted a show called Reflections. I listen to you every day, Brian.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We love hearing from you as well. I would love to play one more bit of tape about sort of from the past of public radio. We have so much we want to get to this hour, but this is what public radio listeners would have heard on an average day in the early years. This is from one of the first local news broadcasts on what was then WSSR-FM in Springfield. Today, it's our partner station, WUIS. This is founding news director Rich Bradley from January 1975.
This is Illinois Public Radio News.
Good afternoon. I'm Rich Bradley reporting for WSSR. 19 dead on Illinois highways over the New Year's holiday. One of the quadruplets born in Quincy is dead. The independent voters of Illinois ducks an endorsement of either Walker or Hallett. The latest international hijacking attempt ends without injury. President Ford issues.
So, Jay Pierce, it's interesting to me what was included in a local newscast in the 70s. Today, a lot of stations, there's a fairly strict division between NPR, which does the national and international, and the local stations, which focus on state and local matters. Can you talk about the evolution of the news side of NPR?
Sure. And by the way, Rich is the guy who started the whole Illinois Public Radio Network that we all work with now. You know, back in the day, we read a lot more wire copy, I think, and statewide news. We didn't really have the focus on the local communities that we do now. So that evolved over the years as we grew news departments at public radio stations. Commercial radio stations used to have every one of them had a news department, 2, 3, or 4 news people. But that started changing throughout the 1980s and 90s. Public radio stations started adding news departments. And a lot of us at college-based stations used students and interns to fill out our staffs. And now when you look around communities, Public radio stations, well, here in the Quad Cities, we are the only radio station, WVIK, that has a news department. And so our focus became more local. It became, of course, inclusive of statewide news that is relevant in our community. Legislative news, of course, is a big thing for us. But we go out in the community and our reporters talk to people in our community. We want to reflect the voice in our community, the voices of our community, just like NPR does the voices of the nation and of the world. And I think that, you know, we're filling in a lot of ways a gap that's been left as newspapers have shed reporters, as radio stations have just gotten rid of news departments.
Yeah, and I would want encourage listeners who want to think, who are interested in the sort of mission of public media and how it's evolved, go back and listen to Terry Gross on Fresh Air last week, interviewed Susan Stamberg, known as one of the founding mothers of NPR, one of the early All Things Considered hosts, and Bill Siemering, who is often thought of as one of the founding visionaries behind NPR, and his early manifesto. He talks about wanting to talk with people in America, not about them. I want to share a couple, we're short on time. I want to share a couple more texts we got from listeners. Justin in Rockford said, NPR first entered my life through a series of skits spoofing it, which I saw as a young boy on Saturday Night Live. I'm guessing Delicious Dish, but that's just me. He says, when a friend first recommended I actually listen to it in the early 2000s, all I expected were versions of these skits. I was surprised by the level of in-depth reporting, their efforts to maintain balance in their journalism, and an effort to be transparent. I was impressed. We heard from another texter named Kyle who shared his thoughts on where he'd like to see NPR expand its coverage. He said, I'm a fan of news programming like 1A and Fresh Air, as well as podcasts like Throughline. I would love to see more programming like Throughline. Their deep dive into the history of policing is something I think about every day. It explores the history and context of what's going on in the news. Yvonne Booz from WNIJ, I want to ask you, you're newer to public radio. Where do you think public radio has room to grow?
I think it has room to grow when it comes to, like you said, more podcasts, more involving the community. For example, I have a segment called Poetically Yours. It airs every Friday, three times, twice on WNIJ, once on WNIU. And I think that just even having that segment will allow me to bring the community in, especially when the pandemic goes away. We can do live events. We've been doing live on Facebook, which have been pretty good. So I think it should, the future of public radio is really, really bringing that community in, especially for the local side of things.
And Gwen, we're running short on time, but you have had sort of a front row seat to the change in public radio, as you know, being about the radio, right? The first Third Coast Festival, I think, was in 2001. I went in 2002 for the first time. I was a nobody. It took me, like I said, it took me many years before I actually managed to jam my foot in the door. But you know, that was a very small, close-knit gathering of people who had sort of found each other. By more recent years, Third Coast is turning people away because, you know, and the New Yorker's doing cartoons about how everybody has a podcast. Can you talk about the evolution of radio into audio that you've observed?
Yeah. And, you know, part of it is just the evolving of any industry past its nascent stage. But, you know, the perfect storm of the base of public radio and the listeners that were used to that sound, plus technology that became ubiquitous and very, very cheap, plus the idea that anybody could write, that a personal narrative was interesting to people, I think created this perfect storm of the podcasting world. And I think it's only going to get bigger and bigger. What I feel is missed by what we're experiencing now is that everything is in such a silo. All Things Considered, Morning Edition, they used to be the only show in town, for better or for worse. And so everything was in there. There was humor, there was essays, there was experimental work, there were long pieces, there were short pieces. now it's like all news all the time. And I really, really miss it. Not to be an old, an old person saying like, oh, the good old days, everybody missed the good old days. That's not true. But I personally just sort of miss it. But this wave that we're seeing is just explosive and wonderful in tons and tons of ways.
No, we definitely heard from a few listeners who also missed the sort of essays and the cowboy poets and the Andre Kudrescus and people like that who had more, you had more variety and more of the breadth of the human experience reflected in some of those news programs. I think that's a great note on which to end our conversation. I want to thank Gwen Maxey and Jay Pierce and Yvonne Booz for being with us today. And I especially want to thank all of you out there listening who contributed calls, text messages, voicemails for this segment, and just everybody who listens every day to NPR and supports their member stations. Thank you all so much for being with us today and every day. And that is all the time we have for our program. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer, and our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.